Welcome to the Home Care Hub, the podcast series for the Home Care Advocacy Network. My name is Mark Goetz. I'm president and CEO of the Home Care Advocacy Network, and we have a very special guest with us today, Dr. Aaron Blight, hailing from Virginia.
Hey, Mark. It's good to be with you today.
Yeah, welcome, Aaron. Great to have you here today. And your most recent book, When Caregiving Calls, Guidance as You Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative, is going to be part of the topic that we cover today. I'm excited for you. Your career is on a rocket ship, the way it looks. Like you're really hitting the need, like hitting a lot of needs right now that are present in the United States and the world, caregiving. And so we're excited to delve into that. But, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us something personally that we may not be able to pick up on if we just read your book.
My favorite color is blue.
Oh, but really?
You didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay. Mine too. Yeah, it's royal blue.
I like royal blue. That's my alma mater's colors, in fact. So, but just in terms of the book, I appreciate the introduction. I'm super excited to have When Caregiving Calls out there and available to family caregivers as well as care organizations. I've had some excellent feedback so far on the book. It's only been out for, I guess, about 6 weeks. But I just got a letter this week from a caregiver who said that they read it and it brought them healing. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, when we, as we were envisioning the Home Care Advocacy Network, part of our story is really tied into caregiving, unbeknownst to us and more kind of after the fact, we realized that our 9 and 10 year old daughter at the time was in part taking care of an aging relative. She was going on photo shoots with my father-in-law on Saturdays, but she was really filling in as a caregiver for her as she had, as her grandma, who she was taking care of, had dementia. So she would take her and do activities and whatnot. And we really had no idea how much that shaped her life until we read her college essay this year. And it was all about her life as a caregiver. And so the topic is near and dear to our hearts and a lot of people's hearts and minds right now, especially coming through 2020, as we look to 2021, people are understanding the value, the importance of caregiving. So you're at the zeitgeist, the apex of the zeitgeist of the culture right now, which is really critical to have a good mind like yours on top of that.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, I think that COVID-19 has certainly raised our collective consciousness about caregiving. But even before COVID-19 hit, with our aging population, we have more and more needs to fill when it comes to caregiving and older adults. And so it's a very important and timely topic. I agree.
Yeah. Let's jump in. Let's talk about very generally the caregiver shortage. So whether you're in the industry, meaning the home care industry, and let me clarify, the Home Care Advocacy Network is really, we are a business format home care franchise for senior living providers, and we're also an entrepreneur-driven franchise for those who want to be their own boss and make a difference. The services that our franchisees provide are private duty home care. It's everything from companionship and respite care, personal care services, as well as dementia-related care. And so there is a great need for those services, and that's who we are as an organization here at HCAN. So caregiving is right in the mix of everything that we're doing, is something we're trying to deliver an experience that's between a caregiver and a client. And that relationship is also between a decision maker oftentimes as well. And if you're, like I said, if you're new to that industry overall, you may not have heard of a caregiver shortage, but this may be like well-worn road for you, that there's just a known caregiver shortage in the world right now. Can you just talk generally about the caregiver shortage that exists and maybe why that exists today? Or if it does, tell us your opinion about that.
Well, there definitely is a caregiver shortage, and I think that that's going to be more acute over time. it really transcends all levels of healthcare. You've probably heard about the shortage of primary care physicians out there. Mm-hmm. There's a shortage of nurses, and there's a shortage of direct care aides and personal care aides and certified nursing assistants. And I know that many of your listeners, Mark, are in the senior living industry and employ certified nursing assistants in their facilities. And the people that work in home care are often CNAs who used to work in facilities. They find a better fit for themselves in home care for a number of reasons. But home care and the nursing home senior living industry is also really looking at a lot of the same pool of potential caregivers. So, but the thing that's, I think, very unique about home care is that you need a lot of caregivers. It comes down to the ratios. You know, if you're staffing a wing at a senior living facility, you might have 10 or 15 people, 10 or 15 residents on the floor, and one caregiver, one aide who goes and provides services to those 10 or 15 people. And, you know, maybe someone passes away, or maybe someone, one of the residents is hospitalized, or maybe a new resident moves in. So that number, that headcount of residents could vary between 10 and 15, 8 and 17. I mean, but it really doesn't matter that much. You still have one caregiver who's serving that floor, and the staffing is pretty much 7 to 3, 3 to 11, 11 to 7, right? So you have one caregiver providing that three different shifts of coverage over the 24-hour period. Well, in home care, for every single person, every single client who receives services, it's a one-to-one ratio of caregiver to client. So that exponentially multiplies the number of caregivers that you need, and they go out to wherever the client lives. So if you have a new client, you need a new caregiver. If you lose a client, now you've got a caregiver that has lost hours, and you have to find a new assignment for that caregiver. And so on a daily basis, there's a very intensive effort in scheduling and in matching caregivers and clients. Just small changes to the schedule can have domino effects on the entire workforce, really. And I know that you know that, Mark, as well.
Certainly. That's excellent. And I would say also my experience to compound on that at times. So I kind of grew up like you. You've done a number of things outside of your past career as a home care franchise owner. You know, as I transitioned from working inside of a large corporate franchise system into senior living and applying those skills, what I saw was exactly kind of what you said. It was a caregiver shortage everywhere. But what was actually happening on our end when we looked through it was our experience of a caregiver reaching out and saying they'd be interested in a job or potentially working for us to the time of their first shift was actually 6 weeks on average across our home care businesses. Inside of pure home care organizations, when you look at some of the stats that exist around home care, and when you look at industry studies, it's actually 6 days. So we had quite a delta to make up. But what we saw was, and all we heard was, well, there's such a caregiving shortage. You know, these businesses can't grow. We can't provide the service. We don't have enough. But what actually kind of existed behind the scenes was a very inefficient process of taking people who are interested in caring for seniors, and those people, I think we would all agree, are absolute gold. And then we've added then a very negative experience that took longer than it should, and it was way under what the industry standard was. And then we kind of helped create some of our own shortage. So I hear you that both exist, and I think there's a lot to be learned on the HR side of things. And it's not like we had bad intentions either. It's not right. Like we were going out and saying, you know, we're going to create a bad experience for these potential employees. We were well-meaning, but we were kind of a victim of our own success in other areas of the business. We were so successful in other areas. Well, why wasn't this working? So sometimes you just have to look under the hood a little bit. And that's, I think, really important on our topic today when we talk about caregiving. But I would love to hear a little bit more about your story, how you came to be an author and then keynote speaker, and then tell us more about your path in caregiving and aging services.
Sure. So I think that my real experience in caregiving started a little over 20 years ago when I was at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. I was in the federal Medicaid program. I was writing national healthcare policy in the Disabled and Elderly Health Programs Group of CMS. And it was a kind of a high profile job, new job. I was working on some new legislation that had just been passed. And my mother-in-law was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and she was given weeks to live. This was totally unexpected, but we really didn't know how to handle it. All that she knew is, you know, she needed to have brain surgery right away. And it was actually lung cancer that had metastasized to the brain, but the tumor was the size of a golf ball. And so she went to Johns Hopkins University, had some very innovative cutting edge brain surgery. And then she moved into our home. She was supposed to just recover from that brain surgery while she was in our home. She was supposed to stay for a couple of weeks, but she ended up staying in our home for a couple of years. She went through radiation, chemotherapy, a second brain surgery while she was in our home, and the cancer went into remission. It was a miracle. She was supposed to live 6 to 9 months max, but she lived a total of 5.5 years. The thing about that, Mark, is her mind was never the same. After that brain surgery, she was in slow, progressive cognitive decline, and so she couldn't be fully independent. Even after she moved out of our house and back into her own place, we were constantly going over there. And so near the end of her life, the cancer returned, and we were referred to a home care company. The hospice agency actually referred us to a home care company, and they came in and they were a godsend for us. I could not believe the impact that they had on our family. They allowed my mother-in-law's needs to be met at a very crucial time of her life. And we could focus more on the relationship that we had with her, the time that we had remaining, and we didn't have to worry so much about the tasks of caregiving. So a year after she passed away, at this point, I was the director of financial operations for the Medicaid program. And I'm not an accountant, but that's where I was. I was in the finance arm of Medicaid at that point. But because my mother-in-law had passed away, our lives were different, and my wife encouraged me to look at changing my career and becoming the owner of a business. And my mind immediately went to home care because of our experience with my mother-in-law and with that home care company at the end of her life.
Yeah.
So I started looking at all of the different franchises in the industry, and ended up settling on Homestead Senior Care. And that's where you and I met, yep, Mark, absolutely, many, many years ago. And became a franchise owner for Homestead Senior Care, and did very well there. Had a couple of franchises, actually, and loved my experience there with Homestead Senior Care.
Likewise.
During that time, I ended up going back to school for my doctoral degree. And my doctoral degree is actually in learning. It's in human and organizational learning. And I wanted to take my studies into a direction that would actually help my business. And this issue that you and I are talking about, Mark, this issue of turnover, was something that was really on my mind, and the shortage of caregivers, and how do we find and keep the best caregivers, mm-hmm, those who are most suited for the job. And I had a lot of questions in my mind about, well, what makes a great caregiver? And so I really was able to delve into that through my research. And we could talk about a little bit more specifically about, yeah, that if you want to later. But the bottom line is I finished my study, got my degree. And then a few years ago, I received an unsolicited offer to sell my home care business. I wasn't looking to do that, but the offer presented itself and I took it.
Yeah.
I felt very grateful for it. And that led me to start Caregiving Kinetics. And I realized that, you know, between my experience in healthcare policy, family caregiving, home care, and also my study of caregiving as a phenomenon of social science, that I couldn't just put that all up on the shelf. You know, I had to do something with that. So I started speaking to groups, to care organizations, and to with paid formal caregivers, as well as informal caregivers, family caregivers, and started speaking to conferences across the country. And that led me to my book, When Caregiving Calls, Guidance Awesome. As You Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative, that just came out in October. And that's my latest effort to try to reach as many caregivers as I can to give them the support that they need.
That's great. Yeah, I think. And then as you transitioned, I was transitioning as well. And then I ended up working for an organization, a senior living organization that really was combining home care and senior living, and it was very near where you were living, and it was one of the very serendipitous steps to us starting the Home Care Advocacy Network, and just being able to have some of the discussions along the way with people who are really beyond a subject matter expert in certain areas to help kind of foster your vision. You were really key for us and for me personally, Aaron. So
thank you, Mark.
Yeah, it's such an honor to have you on the podcast today. So let's jump in a little bit further. So let's talk about caregiving and the family caregiver dynamics. So people wearing multiple hats and how that is affecting them personally, the strain that it's putting on relationships and professional caregiving. Because as you know, it's the same thing that your same experience when my mother-in-law was aging, my father-in-law had made a commitment, and he had made a commitment to the home that my mother-in-law would age in place. So we had to have a professional caregiving service locally help provide service to her. And it was, of course, the company that I had worked for, Home Instead. They did a fantastic job. You know, what we tell our caregivers now is that the apex of caregiving is when, unfortunately, you know, everyone at some point transitions, everyone dies. And my mother-in-law died. But in the memorial card, when you're a caregiver, you'll oftentimes be mentioned right along with the family. Like that's how important this role really is to families. Yeah. And I would love for you to just expand on family caregiving dynamics and caregiving in general.
Well, caregiving was thrust upon me, as I said earlier, in a time that I just wasn't prepared for it. And after working with thousands of families over the years, I've really come to appreciate that you really aren't prepared to be a family caregiver necessarily. Even people who work in healthcare, you know, doctors and nurses, they have the medical skills and that frame of knowledge, mm-hmm. but the social and the relational and the family dynamics that enter into the picture with caregiving, just it takes on a whole different meaning and significance. And I've had healthcare professionals that have told me, you know, I didn't realize how hard this was going to be and what this was going to do to my life. And one of the things that I learned, Mark, in exploring the literature in applied gerontology is something called family caregiver identity theory. And it came from two applied gerontologists who are internationally known, Rhonda Montgomery and Carl Kozlowski. And Carl Kozlowski was right in your neck of the woods. He was at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. Mm. He's deceased now, unfortunately. But he and his research partner, Rhonda Montgomery, studied over 20,000 family caregivers and their loved ones over the course of almost 30 years. And they started to look at you know, the experience of being a family caregiver and developed a theory which is called family caregiver identity theory. And it really defines family caregiving as a series of role-based transitions that are precipitated by the changing health conditions of the loved one. So in other words, your loved one has, you know, whatever sickness or illness, or maybe it's frailty, maybe it's Alzheimer's, but those conditions are causing your loved one to need help. And historically, in your relationship, you've always been a family member with that person, right? Mm, you've always seen yourself as a daughter or a son or a husband or a wife, or in the case of your daughter, a granddaughter.
Yeah.
But because of the health conditions that have now emerged, your role in that relationship is changing. And you're starting to realize that, oh, I'm no longer a daughter or a son, because the things that I'm doing are more caregiver. Like, being a daughter has a very significant and personal meaning.
Right.
The interactions that you have with your mother. Let's talk about a mother and a daughter, for example. You know, the way that you think about your mother is unique. She has a singular role in your life. And she raised you, and she clothed you, and she taught you, and she fed you, and she changed your diapers. And now, you know, she is needing care from you. And that can be very disorienting. It can be disconcerting. It could be confusing. And so the things that you are now doing with your mother, you never had to do before. So you start to potentially ask yourself, well, who am I in this relationship? Am I still a daughter? Or am I actually a caregiver? And how does she see me? Like, does she see me as a daughter anymore? Or is she just, you know, depending so much on me for the tasks of caregiving that my role in this relationship is effectively a new one, a different one? And so family caregivers can really, really struggle with this. It's an identity question. It's, who am I in this very important historic family relationship? And so Montgomery and Kozlowski describe this process in their research. And honestly, Mark, I discovered this when I owned my home care business, and I was just blown away by family caregiver identity theory. It explained for me why I had such a hard time being a family caregiver for my mother-in-law, but also why so many family members struggle in this role. It's a transitional process. So whenever I was talking to a family caregiver that was struggling, I would break out a piece of paper, and I would use these diagrams that Montgomery and Kozlowski use to describe the transitions that they're going through. And inevitably, always, they would be like, oh my gosh, that is my life. That is why I'm having such a hard time with this. So it's something that can be really helpful and insightful, just to understand what's going on and what is the cause, what is kind of the root cause of so many of the challenges that family caregivers have. And in When Caregiving Calls, I try to discuss this in the relationship chapter.
Aaron, thank you for that. And I believe we are going to be providing some for our listeners today, some copies of When Caregiving Calls as well. So as we kind of move on to the discussion regarding the caregiving workforce, then. So there's caregiver identity theory, and you had said that you had mentioned incremental changes. Can you expound on that a little bit more?
So I think that one of the things that's really important to understand and appreciate about caregiving is, especially with elderly people, is that their conditions will change over time. So whatever condition the care receiver is at today, that's their condition today. And so the caregiver meets the needs of the care receiver as they are today. But tomorrow, those needs are going to change. The care receiver's conditions will change and evolve. And as you talked about the transition, right, that inevitably this comes to an end and the care receiver will pass away. But there are all kinds of phases and stages along the way where their conditions change, their needs increase, and the caregiver is in this constant state of adaptation to the care receiver. And so a good caregiver understands the need to be adapting. One of the caregivers that worked for my home care company called herself a chameleon because she was always adapting to the changing needs of her clients. And I thought that was just a great little metaphor for it. But family caregivers and paid caregivers, home care workers, they have to go through the same thing of always adapting to the needs of the care receiver, knowing that they're going to change over time.
So Aaron, let's talk a little bit about the caregiver workforce, because I do think this is confusing at times. So we've been in large part at Home Care Advocacy Network. A big part of our mission has to be in the form of education. And we've been having conversations, creating our own kind of platform. But we've been doing a lot of educating at the high leadership levels inside of senior living, CEOs, chief operating officers, CFOs, on the importance of home care. And there's usually a question, who does this work? How often do they work? And I pulled some stats from the industry, and we'll see if that it kind of matches with what you know in the makeup of the home care workforce. One of the questions is, how many hours on average do caregivers work? Just kind of a cross check. If you're a home care agency owner from that perspective, and you're employing caregivers, so in that relationship, you are most likely providing anywhere between 20 and 30 hours a week, would you say, of care? Just on average?
I think that's about right. Yeah, that's what I've seen. About 40% of the home care workforce works less than 35 hours per week.
And so those hours oftentimes are the hours that, would you say this would be true? That those are the hours that the family is saying, you know what, I can't do these 30 hours, or I can't do these. So it's really working around the family schedule, and that becomes somewhat of the predictor of the caregiver hours in the industry.
Absolutely. And, you know, in contrast to senior living, where you have fixed shifts, you know, that 7 to 3, 3 to 11, it's very, very routine. And, you know, this is the schedule. It's not like that. It's driven by the client and the family's needs. And so the family says, these are the hours that we need you. It's based on our family's schedule. So the caregiver comes in, and it's, again, that process of adapting to the care receiver's needs, but also adapting to the environment. Mm-hmm. And the schedule is an important part of that. So you might have one caregiver that's working, starting at 4 a.m. until 9 a.m. because they need to be available to help prepare their loved one as they get up and they get off for the day. And the family caregiver is gone to work. Or it could be 24/7 or anything in between, you know, or it could just be a few times a month even.
Yeah. So let me ask you, to retain caregivers who are working those types of shifts and doing that type of work for an agency, what are the top two or three qualities of that an agency should exemplify? What are some of the detractors, maybe even as well, when it comes to a caregiver, where they begin to say, you know what, I would rather work for somebody else rather than this agency? Because that oftentimes happens in the industry where an employee, and this happens everywhere, not just the home care or the senior living world, but it starts to be a negative employee relationship. Certain negative factors start to show up, and then inherently there's turnover because of the way that employee was treated, or maybe some of the things that they just begin to disconnect with their agency or their leadership on. What are some of the qualities you would say that are the top qualities that would keep caregivers working for an agency?
Well, I think that a few things come to mind, Mark. One thing is steady hours. Being able to consistently employ the caregiver, because again, it's not fixed shift, fixed staffing. Mm-hmm. So the home care agency should really be looking to provide continuous work for the home care worker. A second thing is the relationship between the caregiver and the organization's administrative team. those interactions can be extremely impactful in how welcome and how valued the caregiver feels as being a member of that organization. So if the dialogue is constantly negative or critical, then that could drive caregivers away.
That's also the same with 14-year-old sons. I'm finding that my wife is saying, you know, like, lay off him. Okay. Do you remember what it was like to be 14? I just had to interject because I was just like, it's almost like with any human relationship, there's an opportunity to see the positive side of things. So if you can take the positive route, take it.
Yeah. One of the questions that I asked in my own research, Mark, when it comes to home care workers is for home care workers, and I think you and I discussed this a few years ago, is caregiving a job or is it a relationship? It's an interesting question because, you know, what motivates a caregiver to be in this type of work? Why does someone become a home care caregiver in particular? Is it because, oh, I have a sense of pride of being employed by this organization? Or is it because they love Mrs. Jones, who they go and see every day, and they have this one-on-one relationship with her, and Mrs. Jones has become like her, like a mother or a grandmother?
Yep.
And that sense of affect between the caregiver and the client is a huge motivational factor for the caregivers to stay. And I think that as an organization, we should cultivate and honor those relationships between caregivers and clients and recognize the significance that those relationships have to the caregivers. And by kind of elevating that special relationship and honoring it, there are ways that you can do that. I think you're really celebrating home care and you're celebrating the caregiver and you're incentivizing them to stay.
Yep. And, you know, and that is another question that we often get as we're having these leadership level conversations. Who are home care caregivers? Who is this workforce? And there are real questions. And some leaders we're talking with, you know, as we talk to senior living organizations about expanding, we talk about widening the funnel so that the care relationship in our line of sight, that's really when care or the relationship has the opportunity to start. And if you have a vacuum there as an organization, you're not going to have the opportunity to start a relationship. They're going to build it and grow it with an agency or with a caregiver first, and then they're going to transition to a senior living organization. But some leaders are really stuck on, there's no way, we can't find the people to do it. We don't even, you know, and they're stuck on maybe, well, we can only hire, you know, LPNs and CNAs for that kind of work. And that is kind of naturally limiting. So tell us, who are home care caregivers in your, just in your experience?
Well, in my home care company, we certainly hired CNAs, but we also hired a lot of people who didn't have that type of credential, but they wanted to help seniors. They had a certain compassion for the elderly, and they wanted to help others. They wanted to make a difference in the life of an elderly person. So they have, they're kind-hearted, they're compassionate, they're service-oriented. 9 out of 10 of them are women.
Yep.
A majority of them, it depends on the market, of course, but nationally speaking, a majority of them are people of color. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, you know, some of this depends on your state licensure, of course. You know, the licensing body for senior living is a different licensing body than home care.
Yep.
But in my case, in the Virginia Department of Health, people who were delivering home care services, certain types of personal care, hands-on assistance, could be either CNAs or they could have completed an in-house training program that I provided to them. And we called them personal care aides. Mm-hmm. So these were people that did not come to us with that CNA credential.
Yeah.
But they had that desire to help seniors. And so we were able to train them in-house. We provided a comparable level of classroom experience to the CNA program. We didn't have the hands-on supervision in a facility because we were not a facility. But under our Virginia home care license, both certified nursing assistants and personal care aides trained by us could do the same thing. And so we turned out a lot of personal care aides. We trained them ourselves. And this is actually a bonus, Mark. I found that our retention, when it comes to turnover, our retention of personal care aides was much higher than certified nursing assistants. So there's something about going through that in-house training program that I think caused our personal care aides to feel more affinity to our organization and want to stay.
That's great. Well, and I think too, I mean, some of the qualities, just speaking personally, that I think you have that probably transcended your leadership. There was probably no room in your leadership team for disrespect of fellow employees. There was room for maybe some of the back and forth that goes on within many organizations, but maybe especially in home care, where things get stressful operationally, and you can, some of the backbiting starts to happen. And I think that then transcends down into your caregiving, you know, team. And I can see you being a good leader that's always trying to challenge people to do their very best and be their very best, in my experience. So
yeah, it's a culture, isn't it? You know, it's an environment of mutual respect and support, and all of that's very important, I think, wherever you are in the organization.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Aaron, any closing thoughts? So I know, so you have the book, When Caregiving Calls. What I'm going to do is I'm going to order 10 copies, hopefully from you, and we're going to provide those 10 to our to anyone who would want to reach out. The first 10 that wants to reach out at partner@hcanthrive.com. That's HCANTHRIVE.com. And so we'll provide the 10 copies to our listeners happily. And then we would love to have you back and maybe expand on more of your knowledge base within caregiving and really get the message out about your book. Talk more about that. And then delve into more of the challenges that aging services faces. So much of it hinges on caregiving.
Absolutely.
We're really honored that you're a part of the discussion with the Home Care Advocacy Network, Aaron. So
thank you, Mark. It's been great to be with you today. I really appreciate it.
Well, as always, you can contact us at partner@hcanthrive.com. The Home Care Advocacy Network is a business format home care franchise for senior living providers and an entrepreneur-driven franchise for those who want to be their own boss and make a difference. Franchisees provide companionship and personal care services along with respite care and dementia care as well for our senior clients. And I want to thank you again for your time. And Aaron, until we meet again.
Thanks a lot, Mark.